Welcome to With All Due Respect, the podcast that speaks to you, and you better listen. Okay, let me tell you something. More than one person has wondered what happened to me in the last scene of The Sopranos. So I'm here on Andrew's podcast to finally let the world know what happened to Tony Soprano. I got tired of the cold weather and high taxes in New Jersey and moved to Jamaica. That's it. Now get out of here and listen to this episode before you start asking too many questions.
Hi, Christopher Walken here. It's time for the entertainment segment. And I know good entertainment. Andrew has some solid stuff. Just solid stuff.
In our entertainment segment, one of the best novels I have read in my life. And it's no wonder. It shouldn't have been any surprise because this book was one of the most highly awarded books of 2023. The book is titled The Bee Sting, written by Paul Murray. It checks in at 642 pages. This entire book is just a brilliant tragic comedy of an Irish family that literally feels like the end of the world is upon each and every one of them. This book is so well written, the character so authentic, but the ending is so incredibly brilliant. You will agree that this is one of the best novels you've ever read. Once again, the book is called The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. Just wow.
Okay, you listen to me. This is the part of the podcast where Andrew and Ethan talk about state and local politics. You got a problem with that? You got a problem with what they say? You come see me. Not Paulie, not Silvio, not some disgraced attorney general. You come see me. Capiche?
In our politics segment, we start with the mayor's race. With ballots due by May 14th, current polls in the closing day of Anchorage mayoral runoff show Suzanne LaFrance with an 11-point lead over incumbent Mayor Dave Bronson. And yet, Bronson's closing message to voters is, I'm normal, she's woke. Ethan, my friend, is that an effective closing message for an incumbent mayor?
Oh my God, emphatically no. I mean, first of all, it's a false binary. Secondly, I mean, what is normal? And since when did we aspire to normal as opposed to exceptional? I mean, is mediocre good enough? Is average? That's not going to cut it with me. That's not aspirational enough. And the whole woke choice, I mean, there's a lot I can go tee off on woke. Woke is just performative. Woke is just about saying the right thing without doing anything about it. I got a lot of complaints about wokeism. So it is a false choice. And if that's his closing argument, it's a concession that he's still trying to rally his base rather than reach across and gather new voters. So lousy argument, lousy choice, and just very revealing about the mindset of the man.
Well, I'm just stunned. The closing message of an incumbent mayor down by 11 points is, I'm normal, she's woke. Dude, if you were normal, you would not be the first mayor in 20 years not to win re-election. The fact is, Dave Bronson's administration has been anything but normal, and that's why the guy's down by 11 points.
I thought, you know, this is Anchorage, where everyone's above average. So the idea that normal is good enough, it sticks in my craw considerably. And, you know, you could say a lot of things about Suzanne LaFrance, but woke is not one of them that would jump to mind. I mean, woke is like sort of an extremist position. And Jay Bronson trying to pretend he's more centrist just doesn't cut it after 3 years in a campaign before that of being an extreme on the right and increasingly marginalized by his own performance and his own rhetoric.
Well, if you know, and I would offer this, if Mayor Dave Bronson had been woke or more awakened during the last 3 years, maybe he wouldn't be down 11 points 10 days before the ballots are due. I mean, this is a dude who's been asleep. So for him to criticize anybody who's woke or awake He's like, you know, I mean, come on, man. You should be that same way because you've been asleep at the wheel the last 3 years, my brother. But let me throw you this. One thing that's been clear by this guy's campaign, messaging from the start, is it's all about attacking the other candidate instead of touting his accomplishments during his last 3 years. I mean,
interjection moment here. Just for clarity's sake, what accomplishments would those be?
Well, that's why he's attacking other candidates from the get-go, right? The get-go. I mean, but seriously, that says a lot about a campaign strategy. I have not seen one single ad where he has touted an accomplishment, right? Improvements in service or efficiency, right? I mean, everything he has messaged is, I've been held down. I've been, you know, my ideas have been killed by the assembly. And this is a dude who's shot himself in the foot with personnel issues, with trust issues. I mean, you know, there's reality and then there's reality.
Even that aside, when you're a leader, you do not have the luxury of being able to blame other people for your failure to perform. Those obstacles to achieving the goals that you set out, you have to overcome those obstacles. They're difficult and they're unfair, but that's not what the public wants to hear about. The public doesn't want to hear about complaining or whining. The public wants to have direction. And when you're trying to blame other people for the failings that you have, that is an inability to be accountable to your own self, and it's an admission that you haven't had any achievements worth talking about.
You're absolutely right. And before we move on, I'll close on this. You know, over the last 3 years, Dave Bronson has not been a mayor. He has been a candidate. This guy, when he was elected, he never stopped being a candidate. Everything was always campaigning. You know, all of the riling the base at the assembly meetings, his first couple of months where they're taking down the protective glass and people are shouting, you know, anti-Semitic slurs and those kinds of things. I mean, you know, this is a guy who never, ever got out of attack campaign mode. He never became mayor, became grounded, surrounded himself with people who were smarter than he was on certain issues that are important to the city and to drive the city forward. This is a guy who never stopped being the attack candidate that he was in 2021. Let me move on to education. So legislature twisting themselves in a knot, trying to solve the education problem that Governor Mike Dunleavy created 10 years ago. Yesterday, Judge Adolph Zeman, who was the judge who ruled that Dunleavy's change to correspondence funding was unconstitutional, he issued a follow-up ruling basically chastising the Dunleavy administration. I mean, a slap across the face for intentionally misreading the court's decision. I mean, you know, this resistance is, I mean, Ethan, this has just gotten to the point of bizarre.
And the answer is so simple. You know, you said this has all been twisted into a knot. It reminds me of the story of the Gordian knot, which was a famous mythological knot that was supposed to be impossible to untie until Alexander the Great came along and cut the knot with his own sword. And when he cut the knot with his own sword, that's how you solve the problem. The answer to this problem is just go back to the way it was before. That's what worked. If people want to come in later on and fix this particular statute about charter schools, go ahead and do that. And correspondence schools, go ahead and do that. But the immediacy of the problem is such that just revert to what you know worked, solve it later on, and move along. The more we stay mired in old problems, the less able we are to overcome new ones.
Okay, so Judge Zeman issued a stay until June 30th, allows parents in the current program to go through the school year, so, you know, to eliminate any uncertainty. June 30th is the end of the fiscal year for the state, July 1st is the beginning of the new fiscal year. So, you know, either the legislature is going to pass some legislation or change it, right, between now and the end of session, and then you'll get back to a normal school year. Or if we keep going back and forth, and Dunleavy has said that he will fight this to the Supreme Court, then if nothing's resolved, there's not going to be a homeschool correspondence program next year. Now, this to me seems like this is the point in time at the journey of the journey that the governor's on that he should stop and say, okay, I'm going to take the advice of Mr. Ethan Berkowitz, and I am going to step back, and we're just going to fix this problem for this year, and if people want to fix it afterwards, that's it. That's what I think he should do, but I don't have any faith in it.
There's a lot of brinksmanship that's going on here. You know, and I think Judge Zeman was very clear that either the state was almost deliberately misrepresenting his ruling. And the brinksmanship here is they're going to bring down the whole correspondence school structure. This is the administration is threatening to bring down the whole correspondence school structure rather than solving the bulk of it and addressing the particular concerns that they have. And brinksmanship is not the same thing as leadership. And you don't engage in brinksmanship when you have the governor's office. You have a responsibility to lead and to lead calmly and to help people towards solutions, not to force them into answers that they don't want to have.
Well, and I think when you look at the trajectory of Governor Dunleavy's two terms, he's in his final 2 years. He has nothing to lose. At this point in time, and we've talked about this a number of times on this podcast, at this point in time, Governor Dunleavy is auditioning for a role in a potential Trump administration. That's what he's doing right now. He's not being the governor of Alaska. He's not concerned about education or a long-term vision about that. He is auditioning. Everything he does, whether it's cutting budgets or whether it's appealing, kind of socially tinged conservative issues to the Supreme Court, all of these things get him little chits in the consideration of being considered for a potential Trump administration. This is what the guy's doing. He's no longer the governor of Alaska. He is applying for a job with a potential Trump administration.
And he has, fortunately for himself, not shot any puppies.
Yep, exactly. All right, final topic, and this has been in the news a lot lately, a lot of letters to the editor and opinion pieces. The legislature's grappling with this now. In today's Anchorage Daily News, former state senator Rick Halford penned an opinion piece about how the legislature needs to restore the constitutional balance in the management of the state's economic development agency, ADA. Now, this is a cry that has been getting louder and louder from Alaskans that ADA is out of control. Okay. Now, what's your opinion? Is ADA being misused as an economic development?
So the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, as Senator Halford pointed out, was created in order to fill gaps in the state's ability to fund particular projects. And what's happened over time is it's lost the ability to do that. And I think Rick Halford was famous for a lot of things in legislature, a great legislator. Really great legislator who understood the process, disagreed with him on a lot of things, but he knew how things worked. What ADA has become is a way of circumventing the legislative process. It is a way for a governor to install his or her people in order to fund particularly large projects. I have no problem with them attempting to fund projects that fail. The risk is part of what has to happen. And you don't get reward if you don't take risk. So the failure of projects isn't something to look at. What I do have a problem with ADA is that ADA is now basically funding established industries. It is not helping grow Alaska in new directions. It is trying to step into the role of giving boosts to mining projects, to oil and gas projects. It is not providing the kind of infrastructure or the seed capital that small businesses need, and it has to do something like that. Once upon a time, not so very long ago, there used to be the Alaska Science and Technology Fund, which was a very small cousin to ADA, to the Industrial Development Export Authority. And that was able to do that, to provide sort of high-risk capital to smaller businesses so they could grow. When ASTF went away, ADA should have stepped into that void. It has not done that. And ADA needs to refocus itself, but it needs to be beholden to policies that are set by the legislature and not be a pet project agency for a governor.
Well, and ADA has amazing potential. I mean, it really does, because the state only has one true economic development agency that kind of generates revenue and keeps that revenue and generates a dividend, and that's ADA, right? Because as we know, ACDA, you know, we don't, the Block 96 project we did downtown, I mean, we're getting paid interest on money we lent over 26 years, right? There's no real repayback to us. The benefit is the city gets additional housing and additional taxes and people downtown. Now, ADA is the one with deep pockets, is the only economic development agency with deep pockets, and they could move the needle. And my feeling is exactly what you just stated. Over the last, I'd say, 15 years, ADA has moved more into an economic development agency that supports established industries, right? I have no problem. I am a huge fan of natural resource development. But please, when cities are screaming about housing and infrastructure, don't tell me you need to lend $300 million to an international mining company that, due to the fact that our education system is failing, are now going to send their employees in from out of state and work in Alaska and then head back. I mean, this whole thing, right? ADA should be involved in more micro attempts to help businesses. And there are so many attempts. I mean, didn't you do something like that at the city?
Yeah, we had a small pilot program that we ran at the city that was able to micro, to help businesses get started, small businesses get started, cupcake stores, very small businesses where people otherwise couldn't access the seed capital. It was not done in competition with the existing banks. It was, and it gave people the chance to start their own business and grow their own business. And ADA should be helping provide that function. And it not in total, but it needs to diversify its portfolio and become much more accessible than it has been. And that's a problem. There's all kinds of things that ADA could help with. ADA could help small family fishermen maintain their boats and acquire their permits. There's a raft of issues out there that could help Alaska. If you want to do things, you could help with food security, helping small farmers or community-supported agriculture. There's a lot of things that ADA could do, but every time I read a headline about ADA, they're trying to build a road for a mining company or subsidize a gas development in Cook Inlet. That's not their business. That's the private sector. Let the private sector deal with it. And if they need to bond for something in order to provide that infrastructure, go to the legislature, have the legislature put forward a capital bond issue that industry can pay back at some point.
And we will leave it there. Ethan, my friend, good to see you. See you next week.
Always.
So this is the part of the podcast where Andrew hired me to do the life segment of this episode. But I've decided to turn this into a no-show job. You got a problem with that?
In our life segment, hotel hot tubs. Oh, God, no, no, and no. This podcast has some very strong opinions on these ubiquitous bubbling cauldrons of bacteria. And here to share those opinions is this podcast's own AI translator.
What up, all you hotel hot tub homies? The concept of soaking in hot water for health and relaxation dates back centuries. Ancient civilizations such as the Greeks, Romans, and Egyptians built elaborate bathhouses around natural hot springs. By the late 20th century and into the 21st century, it became increasingly common for both mid-range and upscale hotels to offer hot tubs as part of their leisure facilities. The history of hotel hot tubs reflects a convergence of ancient bathing traditions, modern leisure culture, and evolving trends into the hospitality industry. However, regardless of the history, hotel hot tubs are disgusting. Look, my friends. If you plan on hitting the hotel hot tub, you better plan on packing your antibiotics because you never know what funky microbes are brewing in there. First, the hygiene concerns. Hotel hot tubs can harbor bacteria, viruses, and other pathogens. Second, you have the risk of contamination. Hotel hot tubs can become contaminated with bodily fluids, skin cells, and other debris from multiple users. And finally, health conditions. Hotel hot tubs are the last place anyone with high blood pressure should be. But yet, why does every dude in the hot tub look like he's a heart attack waiting to happen in a Speedo? Look, if you get a weird rash on vacation, the hotel hot tub might just help you identify its origin story. Hotel hot tub, no damn way. My friends, I will see you in the hotel bar. Travel safe, my brothers and sisters.
Hi, Christopher Walken here. This is the segment of Andrew's podcast I've never really understood. Closing comments. I mean, the entire show is comments, right? Why not just make closing comments a part of the regular comments, and then we can all just get out of here earlier?
In closing comments, looking ahead. One of the many challenges facing Anchorage is a declining student population and the very real possibility that some elementary schools in Anchorage will be closed. Looking ahead, we asked the next mayor of Anchorage what her thoughts were on the potential school closures and if she believes the city has a role in helping the school district reimagine the future for these critical neighborhood assets. Suzanne?
First, I want to acknowledge that this is really tough. We love our neighborhood schools here in Anchorage, and we've seen our schools go underfunded for years by the state. We've seen teachers leave our community and our state and get jobs elsewhere. We've seen families leave and enrollment go down. The idea of right-sizing and closing schools is coming up now because we don't have as many people living here. The out-migration of young people and working families is a threat to our economy and to our community. We need to make Anchorage a place where people not only want to live, but can afford to live, and that means safe streets, good schools, housing, childcare people can afford. The issue we're talking about is in ASD's purview, and I'm hopeful it will follow a robust public process. But the Muni can play a role, when it gets there, of being a partner with ASD and with the neighborhoods to reimagine uses for these buildings. And I'm running for mayor to bring a culture of problem solving back to City Hall. And so we would ask the question, what are the resources the Muni can bring? What processes, you know, need to be worked through, and how can they be streamlined? What does the community want to see? And this means having municipal departments that are staffed up with people that are trained. We've got hundreds of vacant positions right now at the municipality. So we need to staff up the departments and work on making this a better place to live. The mayor can also play a role more broadly on education by being a champion for our public schools, and we haven't seen that with this mayor. And that means bringing partners in Anchorage and around the state together to tell Juno to fund our schools and support our educators. We live in an amazing place. We also know that there are some big problems right now, whether that's the staffing crisis at APD, a lack of a plan on homelessness, and again, the fact that young people are leaving our community. Instead of hearing plans from the mayor, we're hearing fighting and blaming. The mayor's the CEO. The CEO is supposed to bring people together to solve problems. Right now, our team on the campaign is focused on reaching as many people as we can and getting out the vote for the May 14 election. We've got a lot to do, and I'm ready to get to work.